we're in a variety of sessions on elder care issues based on your interest. So today's session is part of a continuing series on halakha in medicine. And it's called Saving a Life, Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And it features speakers that have already spoken on the subject last fall. And we are going to be listening to them get into different issues relating to a subject that we think we know everything about, which is saving a life. But there are a lot of interesting aspects to it, which they're going to get into. This program is a joint effort of the Bikur Cholim of Greater Washington and Chesed Committees of our community, Camp Mill. Although we've asked people from different parts of the Greater Washington area to join us as well. We're going to have this community being the Young Israel Shomer Emunah, Camp Mill Synagogue, Silver Spring Jewish Center, and I'm sure there are others as well represented in this room. We're going to have brief remarks from the Bikur Cholim of Greater Washington, Ricky Reifer, and Carol Silversmith will also be speaking. I will then introduce our speakers, Rabbi Rosenbaum and Dr. Sia Heller. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Ricky Reifer from Bikur Cholim.
On behalf of Bikur Cholim of Greater Washington, I want to thank everyone for coming. We'd like to thank the Chesed Committees of Camp Mill Synagogue and Yisrael Shomer Emunah, Silver Spring Jewish Center, for joining with us to present this today, and a special thank you to Shomri for hosting us today. Thank you to Carol Silvermetz for conceiving of this idea, and to Rabbi Rosenbaum and Dr. Heller for putting it into this format. Thank you to Max Redman for coordinating and publicizing, and Stuart Rosenthal for making our flyer. And a special thank you to Ari Schreiber of Ari Schreiber Studios for videoing this, and we hope to post these on the different shul websites so people who could not be here today will be able to see it and learn the information. Bikur Cholim of Greater Washington works in our community every day, delivering services to local families as well as families who travel to the area from out of town for medical treatment. We visit schools to teach about the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, and we put together innovative programming related to health and well-being. In addition, we work closely with hospital staff to sensitize them to the needs of Jewish patients. We join with JESSA each year to present a symposium, My Brother's Keeper. Rabbi Rosenbaum participates in that, and we're very grateful for that. And we talk about the special needs of Jewish patients so that when needs arise in hospitals, they are aware of different situations. And to give you an idea of some of the work we do, we have some pictures here that show our work in action, from delivering meals to transporting patients to medical appointments to visiting patients in hospitals, our art program in the hospitals, and special holiday programming. This past week for Purim, we delivered over 30 Mishloach Manot packages to the ill, the elderly, and the homebound in the community. But we can't do our vital work without your help. We need each and every one of you. We need your time, we need your financial support, we need your ideas. So if you haven't already, please go to our website and sign up to register to volunteer. It's very easy. We have a lot of different volunteer opportunities. You can pick the areas that interest you, and we also allow you to pick the times and the days you're available, so you'll only get called when needs arise that fit your schedule. This morning's program is being sponsored in memory of Ilan Rasuli, Halev HaShalom, by his parents, and I'm going to call up Carol Silvermetz to speak briefly about Ilan and why this program is so important.
Hi, thank you. I would like to thank you all for coming to this event, which was inspired in the memory of Ilan Rasuli, Zichrono Livracha. Ilan was vibrant and passionate, and when his name is mentioned, one remembers the mitzvot that he keenly practiced, Ben Adam L'Chavaro. Ilan would leave his home extra early on Shabbat morning to walk and converse with one of his closest friends to shul, and would do the same on his way back from shul with another of his closest friends. Then after lunch, Ilan would go to another of his closest friends, who lived a little further in distance. Either staying at that friend or waiting for or going to another place, he would pick up yet another friend to ensure that he had special time with that friend too. He did this to give each of his friends kavod and to ensure that each relationship was meaningful and special. By mid-afternoon, the chevre would all be together in brotherhood. In college at Cornell, he was the co-president of the Jewish Living, and his room was the Oneg Room. He wanted every Jew to feel welcome and wanted to spread the joy of Shabbat to all Jews. Ilan had many passions and used his energy to do good deeds and help others. The tragic event that occurred during the first day of a three-day Yom Tov left much to reflect upon so that we can do better as a community and in the future. The goal of this event is in memory of Ilan's passion to make things better and to look at issues in a unique perspective. May his memory be your blessing. Ricky has asked me to mention that with the help of Rabbi Rosenbaum, we have created very special ID cards. And these ID cards are not typical in the fact that one of the things during a three-day Yom Tov, most people have their cell phones turned off. How do you get in touch with people? And so these IDs will help so that we can get in touch with people who really need to know when there's a medical emergency. The Bikur Cholim has a bunch here. We urge you to take it and to use them. We'll talk about Rabbi Rosenbaum. I'm sure we'll direct how you can use them and keeping with halacha. And I just want to thank you all for coming to such an important event.
Thank you, Ricky. Thank you, Carol, for your remarks and for reminding us of what we do is a host to other people's neshamas and to our life as a community. So I'd like to introduce our speakers who have spoken before last fall on the subject of end-of-life issues. And those remarks were very well received, so we have, as you pointed out, I'm taping this again for those who cannot make it or would like to reflect and learn from what is discussed here, because a lot of material that's presented that is of very great interest and can be reviewed periodically. And they are available at the Bikurim website as well as the Young Israel Shomrim website. There are seats in the back here for those of you. This may not be necessary because many of the people in this room know our speakers, but I will share it with those who may not, and for those who may be listening to the tape for the first time. Rabbi David Rosenbaum is a musmach of the Yeshiva Greater Washington. He's been a congregation rabbi for the last 14 years, the last four as a rabbi at Young Israel. He has counseled many individuals and relatives, those facing the kind of issues we present here. Those are the president of the Vaad HaRabbanim of Greater Washington. Dr. Sia Heller is a graduate of Georgetown Medical School who has extensive research and clinical experience in the treatment of liver diseases. In his capacity, in his second job as an emergency room physician, he deals with life and death issues. He communicates with patients and their families, and quite important, as an American Jew and a member of the Kampman community, he understands the issues and has worked closely with Rabbi Rosenbaum. Many in our community have called on his expertise and great communication skills. The format is going to be, there are many issues relating to Shabbat. We're going to try to, because of the way they decided to format this program, we're going to have some key issues, concepts presented, and illustrative examples so that you have a sense of how this works. And we're going to hopefully have some time for Q&As at the end. Before I forget, we really welcome your thoughts for future programs. We're interested in input on how this went, as well as ideas for further work, and your volunteering effort as well. You heard Carol Silvermes generate this idea. We would like to get other ideas from you as well. With this, I'd like to start with Rabbi Rosenbaum.
I'd very much like to thank Bikur Cholim. Ricky Reifer, of course. Audrey Siegel is always behind the scenes, whether she's physically present or not, for doing so much within our community, and this is just another example. I'll certainly thank Carol Silvermetz for initiating this concept. This was very inspiring. She said, very much related to this topic, and it's very beautiful. A lot of people have ideas and don't bring them to fruition. So, kol hakavod, and I'm sure it'll be a very meaningful schus for his neshama. And thank you very much. I also just want to. I don't feel I can thank Max Rebbin enough for all he does within our community, but I'll just say my recognition and appreciation for him is ever increasing. It doesn't matter if it's his project, someone else's project. If there's something that needs to be done in the community and Max can help, he's there. And thank you for all you do. Thank you very much. And finally, my dear friend Dr. Theo Heller was honored at our Shul's dinner this past Sunday. If I say too much about him at this point, he might no longer be my friend. But we'll just suffice with he's a person who does so much for our community, and the feeling of so many within our Shul this past Sunday night was we couldn't have found a better couple than he and his wife Leanne, Mrs. Malach, to represent so much of what we hope to be as people, and we're very honored to recognize them as a Shul, and thank you very much. And I just must add, I don't believe I ever met Ilan Rasuli, but hearing about him after his passing, it was very, very moving to hear how such a young man could make such an impact on those around him. And I hope this program is a covenant and an evening for his neshama. Before we get to the actual primary topic at hand, if I could just speak for a few moments. First of all, the card idea that Ricky spoke about a few moments ago, I think is a stellar idea. It really was initiated by Carol also, and thank her for that too. The basic concept being that, of course, as we know, people walking around on Shabbos or Yom Tov don't have their wallets with them, don't have their driver's license on them. It's one of the most basic things emergency staffs will do is to look for the basic identity, contact information, things of that sort. So the concept would be that a person could take this card has the person's name, number, but also contact information of those close to the individual. As the comment has been made, they're not going to be picking up a phone on Shabbos Yom Tov if there was an emergency that happened on Shabbos Yom Tov, but it gives their address. I've unfortunately found different times over the years the police to be extremely gracious in understanding the limitations of our community on the Shabbos Yom Tov, and just I've had them come to my door sometimes that so-and-so is looking for you, so-and-so needs you. I'm sure they would do it for others too, but if they don't know who to contact, they don't know who to go to, what are they supposed to do? So it's really a wonderful, wonderful idea. I saw it's a laminated thing. It could certainly go in a person's pocket for those don't have pockets. My wife tells me there are those who don't have pockets. They could certainly, one could pin it to their garment, certainly before Shabbos Yom Tov, that for sure. And it could very well be that a person could do it on Shabbos Yom Tov. We could talk about that later. But I do want to clarify, in my opinion, at least this could not be carried around if there's no Eruv that given Shabbos. But thank God, if a person got into the habit of carrying these things around with them, on Shabbos in general, and certainly on Yom Tov, it could certainly be carried around on Yom Tov, whether or not there was an Erev that Yom Tov. I think it could be very, very helpful to people, and I think it would be a good idea. There's even a little blank area at the end of the card. If a person, for example, had unique information because it was a three-day Yom Tov and they were going somewhere or another, that they could fill in. So I would really encourage you to take these cards at the end of the program and to fill them out. They're really self-explanatory, and I think it could be very helpful for someone else in another circumstance. The other thing I want to say is it's wonderful for people to come out for an event to think about things that maybe they're not thinking about, especially if it's unpleasant topics. I just want to raise another unpleasant topic that to many in the room I'm sure is self-evident, but it's always worth it to remind ourselves. Life insurance is very important. Again, I hope I'm not making anyone uncomfortable, but we do so many other things to make sure that we and that our needs are taken care of, the needs of our families are taken care of. We don't know how long we have in this world. Heaven forbid for people to not have life insurance could compound the challenges that a family could have upon losing someone suddenly. So I would just throw that out in general for people to think about. Now to go on to the primary topic of today, the idea of being Mechallel Shabbos, the idea of doing things normally prohibited on Shabbos for the sake of saving a life. It's a fascinating concept. We, of course, think of Shabbos as the most sacred, most holy of aspects. It's a sign of connection between man and God, between Jew and God. And the idea of doing anything to desecrate the Shabbos is somewhat shocking. And yet we're told in the Torah of Ochai that our instructions from God are to live by God's mitzvot, which means that with specific exceptions, idol worship, illicit sexual relations, and murder, I don't think we're going to have elder care sessions on any of those three. One is supposed to violate what are normally rules of the Torah for the sake of preserving life. It speaks in a very inspiring way to how God views our lives, that every moment we have in this world is an aspect of serving God, so much so that we would even desecrate the Shabbos. So much so that we would have to desecrate the Shabbos for the possibility of saving a life, even if we're not sure if it will save a life. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, God willing. There is a very famous question in Halacha about the general concept of saving life. And that is, do we say that the laws of Shabbos are hutra, or do we say that they are dechuya? Hutra means that if a person is in a life and death situation, everything goes. Whatever you need. It's life and death. All rules are off. Just do what you need to do. And even if you don't need to do it that much, the laws of Shabbos are suspended. That's what hutra means. We don't really go like that position. We go like the position that dechuya, which means that if there are specific things that one needs to do on Shabbos to save life, one does it, but it's not a blanket that you can just do whatever you want. Shabbos isn't over for you, just whatever needs to be done, you do. I want to clarify, because this is a question I'm asked a lot, when we say that we are Mahalo Shabbos to save a life, that's not because it's an emergency, so we're Mahalo Shabbos. That's because it's a very specific allowance to be Mahalo Shabbos to save a life. So, for example, the question that I'm asked sometimes is, if, heaven forbid, a person has a loved one in the hospital alive, but they're in the hospital, there's nothing, they've been in contact with the medical staff, they visited the person, there's nothing that needs to be done, and then the person passes away on Shabbos. Are they allowed to drive to the hospital to be there when the person has passed? And the answer to that is, unfortunately, no. In other words, this is not a concept that when it's something very sad, we're Mechallel Shabbos, or something very important or urgent, we're Mechallel Shabbos, it's to save life, we're Mechallel Shabbos. So just please keep that in mind as we're having this discussion. I also want to clarify, I'm glad I gave my earlier class this morning, because someone posed this at the earlier class, I hadn't even thought about it, but it's a very important point. The reasons, if people are curious, we could talk about the reasons later, but I don't want to take too much time for the program. Practically speaking, what we'll hear today about what you can do to help a Jew, to help a person on Shabbos, if their life is in danger, practically speaking, applies to Jews and non-Jews alike. Might be a little bit surprising, but if people want an explanation, I'm happy to give it later, but it's just a good thing to keep in mind. If you find yourself, the same way that if you find yourself, however, been in shul, and something happens to a person, you can do X, Y, and Z. If you find yourself walking home from shul, and someone who's not even Jewish, to the best of your knowledge, has similar experience, you can also do X, Y, and Z. And if people want, they can ask about that later. It is interesting, I will hear in a moment from Dr. Heller about some very wonderful concrete examples where a person's life is really at stake, but it is important to know that this is not a general medical allowance in halacha, it's a life-saving allowance in halacha. So it's good to have a sense of things that are potentially life and death situations. The one thing that I'll add to the list that Dr. Heller is about to discuss is, it's very interesting, the Gemara specifically talks about vision. That if someone's vision is at risk, that something, they just have had some accident, and they're at risk in losing their ability of vision, that actually has the same status as all the other things Dr. Hill is about to speak about in a moment. We will speak later in the program about a lesser level of medical emergency or medical need that's not life and death. But without further ado, I step to that.
Thank you. I also would like to start with a list of thanks. I'd like to thank Bikur Cholim very much, because I see what they do in the hospital every day. We had a patient recently come to NIH, and without further ado, there was a fridge, there was a hot plate, there were meals delivered three times a day, there was company. It's very humbling and inspiring, and it makes a tremendous difference to the patient, and not only the patient, their family was there from a different country, the family had food. So I think it's a tremendous chus for our community to have the Bikur Cholim that we have, and everything that they do. And I'm very grateful to see that and to be part of a small part of that. I want to thank Bikur Cholim for the program. thank Max Redman. I want to thank Carol Silvermitz for the idea and for pushing it. I think this is very important. I want to thank the Rasuli family for allowing this. And I did not know Ilan, and I did not know, I do not know, really know the Rasuli family. I've met them, but I think everything I've heard has been very inspiring. And I think that hopefully this will be an opportunity to provide for this Swiss voice nation. Also, to thank Grandma Rosenbaum. Glad fair game, right? So, I said this before, and I'm going to repeat myself. It's unusual to find someone who's so caring, so knowledgeable, and so curious about, and so determined to do the right thing. He has the whole package. There are many people who have one aspect, or two aspects, or three aspects, but to have the whole package and to care so deeply is very unusual, and it's a privilege for me to be able to work with him. Thank you. So, I'm going to go through some concrete examples of what Pikuach Nefesh is, and I'd like to start with a story from when I was a medical student in South Africa. Dr. Fred Rossner came to visit, and I went to hear him speak, and I have to be honest, I wasn't quite attentive the whole time, but what I do remember, a story that really stuck with me, is he told the story of how when he was in the hospital, he was paged, and he recognized the number, and it was on the 7th floor. And if I get the story wrong, it's my fault, but the essence of the story is correct. So he walked up the stairs, and he got to the top of the stairs, and went to the ward, and it was an older man who was worried about his toe. And he told Rav Moshe Feinstein, look at that, I was so lucky, did the right thing, I didn't answer the page, I didn't take the elevator, I walked up the stairs, and I would have been Mechalel Shabbos for nothing. And Rav Moshe turned around and shouted at him. He said, how dare you? Who do you think you are to take that responsibility? Even if they had called you and you'd spoken to them and said it was a toe, how do you know it wasn't the beginning of an infection? You can't take chances. You should never take chances. And that story's really stuck with me. And again, I'm fortunate because I think Rabbi Einema had the Tzal had the same approach, Rabbi Rosenbaum has the same approach. And so we're going to talk about concrete examples, but I wanted to start by saying that if there's doubt, I'd let the rabbi address it. In my mind, there should never be doubt. You should always err on the side of doing the right thing, of calling. So let's talk about stroke. Let's start with something like stroke. So recently someone said to me, you know, I don't think stroke is so important. I see that no one dies from stroke anymore. So I said to them that I have to strongly disagree. I think the reason people don't die from stroke is because they get care. Mm-hmm. It's because we get you to the hospital. And because there are so many things we can do, so many cool and awesome things that can be done in the hospital. We can send little wires up into the vessels in the brain and pull out the clot. And give clot-busting drugs. Most people who get to the hospital within 90 minutes will have no deficit. So time is everything. So what is a symptom of a stroke? So the classic symptoms that the EMS are taught, three things, slurred speech, asymmetry in the face, the muscles in the face don't look the same on both sides. The one side works, you ask them to smile, one side lifts up, the other side doesn't. And the third thing that they're taught is inability to move or loss of function in one side, right or left hand, for example, or arms. And people don't have to have all the symptoms. People can have some of the symptoms. The symptoms can all start together. The symptoms can start one at a time. But that's a very real example where even if the person says to you, I'm fine, I've had this before, you don't hesitate. There are different kinds of strokes. For example, there's a stroke called vertebrobacillar stroke where people present with dizziness. So if someone's never had dizziness and they become dizzy but don't pass out and the dizziness persists, you would call. So I'm not telling you this to go through the medical textbook. I don't want you to remember every symptom. But I want you to remember the essence, that if someone has symptoms that come, you think, that sound like the brain, it shouldn't be something to hesitate for. And to argue that people do better with heart attacks now, that people don't really die from heart attacks or strokes, is not valid. The reason for that is because we can take care of people. And that's why time is of the essence. Let's talk about heart attacks. So the classic thing everybody knows is chest pressure, chest pain. Everybody knows about that. But older woman, I'm not saying elderly, older woman. Last time I got into trouble, because we used what people thought was an inappropriate age. So I'm going to be very careful. I'm not going to give an age. So in older women, about 30-40% won't have symptoms of chest pressure or chest pain. You've got to be very careful. can be short of breath, it can be lack of energy, but it's usually of relatively sudden onset. So again, the classic chest pain, very important to call. Even if you think it's indigestion, let the doctor sort it out. The second thing is the sort of dizziness, shortness of breath, particularly in an older person, and particularly in women, be more sensitive. What about the older person who passes out on Shabbos? I don't think there's a question you have to call. In older people, we're going to talk about passing out a little bit later again, but in an older person who passes out in Shul on Shabbos, it's a classic situation. I don't want to go. And the rabbi and I have both seen examples of people where they're asked to call EMS, we go away, and then when the EMS comes, they say, no, I'm feeling better now. You have to go. Could have been a heart attack. It could have been a rhythm disturbance. The differential doesn't matter for this setting. All that matters, older person who passes out, you have to call. What about a broken bone? There are lots of kinds of broken bones. Don't have to remember them all. But the ones that stick out through the skin, those are important. Those are called compound fractures for a trauma surgeon. I think you would agree. Compound fractures, time is important. So there's a theme here. There are things where we can intervene and make a difference. Where time is important, that you can't hesitate. And that's really the message of all the things I'm going through. I'll give you one more example. I want to talk about children. A few years ago, someone came to my door, and they brought this child who was literally blue. And I said, come in, hold on, and I went and called 911. So they were worried. So I understand. They're not bad parents. They're worried about 911. They're worried about Michal Shabbos. So that's why this sort of program is so important. There's settings where you have to call, right? As the rabbi said. So I think what I've tried to illustrate are a not exhaustive list, and I don't want you to remember all the symptoms, but again, the theme, time makes a difference. We have the ability, we've been given the ability to develop treatments that make a difference, and we have to take advantage because life is important.
So we're at the point where we've decided that it's chas v'shalom, a real risk to life. As Theo just mentioned many, many times, we talk about a risk to life. Time is of the essence. So that is the, in terms of practical application, that's the first point I would make, that it's important to do it fast. It's interesting. I don't say this, heaven forbid, as any aspersion on anyone within the shul. But for many years here in the shul, we had a gramophone upstairs, and that was wonderful because. We'll talk in a few moments, if we don't need to be Michal Shabbos, you shouldn't be Michal Shabbos, and a gramophone is less of a Michal Shabbos. It's a, without getting into detail, a certain type of phone that you can just, it's a little bit indirect, so it's less of a issue of Michal Shabbos. What I found, we had a few times over the years that, unfortunately, we did need to call the hospital on Shabbos, and it was such a patchy. And find the phone, and where's the phone?
Who's got the key?
Then, who's got the key? So I personally felt that it wasn't a good idea anymore. So I still do it. I'll say it here publicly in this setting. Many of the people here daven and youngest are shomerun on Shabbos. I bring my cell phone every Friday that I'm here, and I stick it right behind my seat. I charge it before Shabbos. I stick it right behind my seat by the window ledge there, and it's there. And I've had the opportunity we'll speak about that in a moment, to use it on Shabbos, and anyone who needs to should feel free. We also have a few emergency packs in different locations around the shul. There's a pack with a phone in it in underneath the talus area in the main lobby. I believe there's one by the sink downstairs. But it's very important, if it's a situation that time is of the essence, to just do it. If it's a situation the time is possibly of the essence, to just do it. Now, there are times where it's very obvious that there's plenty of time. I'll give the most basic example, I think, is a woman who's gone into labor. So sometimes it's very obvious that you don't have much time. That's also, my wife has taught me about that also. But for anyone who knows me and knows my wife, it should be obvious that the moment my wife feels anything, I feel we need to get moving to the hospital, and my wife feels she's got all the time in the world. But there are times where a person knows that they have time. So, for example, we had the Baruch Hashem, our third child, we went to the hospital on Shabbos, and I said to my wife, you know, earlier, I said, you know, if you begin to feel contractions, well, let's go earlier rather than later, because if you're confident that you have time, we can ask a non-Jewish neighbor to call a cab for us. And we were there. We were in the hospital for hours. Now, I just want to be very clear, if a person's not absolutely sure that they have plenty of time, they should just get in the car and go. But many times, one is confident that they have time. So this is true in all different types of circumstances. If it's evident that one has time, in following what was said before, if there's even the slightest possibility that one doesn't have time, one should not play around. One should just get in the car and go. Or call the ambulance, whatever it is. There's a very interesting question. If I could have a non-Jew do something on Shabbos, or a Jew do something on Shabbos in life at that situation, what's better? What's more appropriate? So this fits a little bit into what we discussed before about Hutra versus Dechuya. You know, if there's something that happens in the shul on Shabbos, and the non-Jewish maintenance man is standing right there next to me, and we're both there, and it's either a question of my picking up the phone or him picking up the phone, I mean, Seichel says, let him pick up the phone. But if the question is, well, let's find him, and I think he's upstairs, but I don't know, then especially if you talk about something which has the potential to be timely, what are you playing around for? Just pick up the phone. And it's very interesting. There are sources in Halacha that talk about the person with the longest beard should be the one to do the malacha. I shaved on Friday, but should be the one to do the malacha. Part of the point being that people need to understand the story with Dr. Razner Moshe Fein is a very nice illustration of that. That people need to understand that it's what God wants you to do at that moment. But again, so if somebody needs to go, but it's not, they need to go in the next minutes. They need to go in the next hour. They need to go in the next 2 hours. If it's a situation like that, and there's a non-Jew who can be readily found to drive the person, that obviously makes more sense. Okay. If everything is being taken care of, and there's malacha that needs to be done, and it can be done with a shinui means to do it in an abnormal manner, that is the better way to do it. So let me give an example or two of shinui, but let's talk about when it's not so smart, okay? Theoretically speaking, if a person needed to call an ambulance, and they could call with a shinui, which would mean, let's say, they could call with their elbow or something like that, maybe their knuckle, that would make some sense. If it takes them 5 times to get the right numbers because they've never done it before with their elbow, that makes no sense, if people are with me. The practically speaking, the most common application of shinui, in my opinion, is a person gets to the hospital and they say, okay, please sign this form. Now, truth be told, if you come to Holy Cross, they see from Jews all the time. You know, you just tell them I'm observant Jew, I don't sign things on the Sabbath, but the vast majority of the time they'll just say, fine, and they just write it. But you might be in another place where they don't know what in the world you're talking about. So at that moment, if you could sign with your left hand, it's better to sign if you're writing. It's better to sign with your left hand than with your right hand. If you can sign with, let's say, one letter, you know, sometimes some people have like a large letter signature. If that's okay, then that's better. This accounts about 2 letters being a little bit more of a greater malacha. But this is all assuming that it makes sense. In terms of the trip to the hospital on Shabbos, we've kind of touched on it already. Let me first clarify, as I say to many people who call me with questions, don't try to drive with a shinui. Both hands on the wheel. Clarify. Mr. Connick, I've told you 3 times to not drive with a shinui.
I know you do.
Yeah. The reason I have to tell people is people who watch me drive assume that I'm driving. but the bottom line is that, again, if there's plenty of time, it makes sense to have the ambulance be called. Now, a very common question is if the ambulance is called and a person is coming in that setting, should someone go along in the ambulance on Shabbos? We normally hold that, that people, it's not only an issue to drive a car on Shabbos, but it's an issue to be a passenger in a car on Shabbos. It's far less of an issue than driving the car. But I strongly counsel people that there should be at least one person who's able to be an advocate for the patient, who knows the patient's history, who knows the patient's story, without question, to go along in the car on Shabbos. That's no question at all. That's a very, very important thing. And it's just important to keep in mind, because many times you have to make split-moment decisions. When in doubt, pick up the phone, call, and it's certainly fine for someone to come along and be a passenger. If the need would arise logically that there needs to be more than one accompanying person, it makes sense for more than one person to come too. But I think in most circumstances, in those moments, it makes sense for one person to come along. That's my experience, at least. Okay, to switch gears a little bit, what I want, and this has really been addressed to a certain extent already, but I just want to reemphasize it. Even if it's a suffik about pikuach nefesh, even if it's a suffik, if it's a doubt, it's very clear in the halacha that one is supposed to do it. This type of event is very good because it gives people a little bit more of an understanding of what is an issue and what's not an issue. But certainly, many of us will walk out of this event and have a situation in the future and still not know. I want to tell you a terrible story that I once heard, that there was a person who passed out on Shabbos. There was a person who passed out on Shabbos, and they had to be taken to the hospital, and there was some question, and a very, very well-meaning, something had to do with the medications, a very well-meaning family member did not go to the hospital, did not give the medications to the ambulance driver. They ran to the rabbi's house. They ran back. It was extremely sincere, extremely wonderful, but not correct. And if something happens that you're not sure about, err to the side of just doing it. Rahman al-Itzlan. We're not doctors. We don't know. But if we think maybe possibly it's something that's urgent, we should just do it. And if we can ask a doctor later, maybe they'll tell us that there was no need to. Okay, we tried our best. That's the worst thing they said to me after 120 years. I feel pretty good. And now, Dr. Heller will give us some, so we could just be a little bit more armed, some more classic examples of what might be very, even for a doctor, what might be real cases of something.
If I can just interject. The two orange emergency kits, one is, as Rabbi Rizmok said, under the tallis rack, the placing rack, in the lobby of the main shul. The other one, there's only two in these buildings, is in the coat room under us in the far left corner. They both have phones in them. The phone Rabbi Rosenbaum has, there's a phone in my tallis box. I think there's a phone in our catch's box.
Thank you. And I'm glad I came today. Thank you very much. No, that's very important. Thank you. And I just, before we go on, if I could just, I remembered, I think I slightly misspoke at the very beginning. It should certainly be fine if people need to pin those cards onto their garments on Shabbos or Yom Tov. It should certainly be fine to pin them on Shabbos or on Yom Tov too. I think I misspoke a bit.
With the Erev or without the Erev?
Still only if there's an Erev. Still only if there's an Erev.
I'm going to talk just about a few examples where there's more of a question, but really where we might be more complacent, but I think at the end requires judgment, but would be better to call. One example is seizures. Mm-hmm. So I was at Adassa Hospital 2 weeks ago, and I was walking through the emergency room with the head of pediatrics, and he told me about a case of a child who came in with seizures, but had long-standing seizures. They knew about it. And they didn't admit the child, they just sent the child home. It's correct. It's the right thing to do.
It is.
On all levels. Right. Mm-hmm. It's very different to a child who comes in and has their first seizure. Very different to an adult who has their first seizure. So you have something like a seizure, which in one setting is very urgent and requires therapy, but in another setting, not at all. Another example is passing out. I said we'd come back to that. So we could take an 18-year-old. We could talk about an 18-year-old passing out in different settings. So an 18-year-old has a tremendous fight with their parents and falls to the ground, passes out. Parents lift up their legs. Within 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes, they're back, they're awake, they're completely fine. That's okay. Very different, you find the same 18-year-old in their bed, and you can't wake them up. And you don't know what happened before that. And we've had Lo Aleinu and Rachmana Litzlan in our community instances where people have had used drugs. and things like that. And then you have to, you don't know. And even if it's your own child and you think you know, you have to call. And if there's trauma preceding someone passing out or someone becoming slurred or someone changing the way they behave, there's no question you call as soon as that starts. So you could take the same thing, passing out, or the same thing, seizures, and depending on the setting and the context, can be completely different. So again, I don't think we should spend time, or even I as a doctor, don't try and analyze the situation and say exactly what happened, and let me see, is this some time that you do need to make the call or not? The reason I like the example of the child in the emergency room with seizures is because they made the decision to call and send the child. And only after the child was evaluated in the emergency room did they make the decision to send the child back. Right. Let a professional make the decision. Even though you could argue that there's a range of possibilities. Maybe you want to say my 18-year-old child who passed out after fighting with me and he's 100% okay after 2 minutes. That's okay, maybe. You know, there you don't necessarily have to call. But the point is that there are different settings, different context for the same situation that may give to rise to very different answers.
So now we're going to shift gears a little bit. What we've been talking about up until now has been for the halachic status of what's called a chola shigesh bo sakana, an ill person who's in life and death danger, what we really mean when we talk about pikuach nefesh. But there's a wide range in halacha for what's called a chola she'ein bo sakana, a person that it's not life and death at this point, but in halacha, they're really classified as a chola. They're really classified as an ill person. The most basic classification of this in halacha is a person who's no fellow mishkav, a person who is bedridden because of their illness or pain or whatever it is. It's not life and death. You have no suffix at this point. You've been to the hospital. You've spoken to the doctor. It's just very obvious that it's not life and death, but they're in bed because they're in so much pain, they're ill, whatever it is. And theoretically, if a person is in extreme pain, we're not talking about a headache now, we're talking about extreme, extreme pain, so much so that the person's whole ability to function is compromised, that's a good general guideline, then they're also classified as a chola. So what could be done for a chola she'ein bo sakana on Shabbos? And maybe just to think of one specific example as we're going through, a very common example, but there will be other applications, is a person in the hospital. They've had a surgery. They're recovering from a surgery. They're lying there in bed. They're in pain, whatever it is. So it's not life and death. If a Jew could not just do whatever they need to do on Shabbos to help this person, that would be inappropriate. But what can be done? This is something we should all be well with, something many of us or our family members experience. So the basic guidelines are as follows, that for the sake of the care and comfort of the person, a non-Jew could be explicitly asked to do anything. So I just want to clarify, if the person needs more pain medication, they could tell the non-Jewish nurse they need more pain medication. They don't have to start hinting to them about their Aunt Sarah in Brazil who once was in pain. You know, no hints necessary. They can say it explicitly. I would extend that to anything for the care of the patient. Person wants the lights off. They want to be able to sleep a little bit. Their ability to sleep or the angle of the bed, whatever it is, all that has to do with basic care of the patient. As long as you're dealing with a non-Jew, you can ask explicitly. People frequently in the hospital will ask me, do they have to find out if the attendant is a Jew or a non-Jew? I don't think that's a person's responsibility. I think there's a very high percentage of medical staff that aren't Jewish. I think a person can assume that they're not Jewish. If they tell you they're Sarah Cohen from Brooklyn, you might have a different perspective. But I don't think you have to conduct an investigation. Now, that's one category that's permissible for this type of chola on Shabbos. Just to recalibrate it for a second, let's say a person had something happen on Shabbos that's clearly not pikuach nefesh. Clearly not pikuach nefesh, but they're in a great deal of pain. They broke a bone and nothing is sticking out, and there's a doctor standing there, and the doctor says, there is no way that your life is in any danger whatsoever, none at all, but you know, you're going to need some medical attention, and the person's in terrible pain. So at that point, it would be perfectly fine to ask a non-Jew to call the ambulance and let the non-Jewish ambulance driver come and pick up the person. for a Jew to call the Yamas at that point actually is would be problematic if it wasn't clearly Pikuach Nefesh. I just want to be clear about that. Well, actually, I'll come back to that in a moment. That's not necessarily true. Thank you. That's not necessarily true. There's one more issue, which is Sakanas Eiver, which is that if a person's limb is, thank you very much, if a person's limb is at risk, so truth be told, a Jew would be allowed to call the ambulance because it's rabbinically prohibited to make the phone call. So a Jew would be allowed to do rabbinically prohibited. We'll take questions at the end, okay? A Jew would be allowed to do rabbinically prohibited things. But the bottom line is if a person had an episode that requires medical attention, that causes them great pain or illness, but it's clearly not pikuach nefesh, okay? The general rule would be you can have a non-Jew do things on their behalf. And if it's specifically regarding a limb, that's a little bit of a different category. And for that, even a Jew could do things that are only rabbinically prohibited. And some classic examples of rabbinic prohibition would be things involving, normal things involving electricity and phone calls. I hope I didn't lose people. Is this making sense still? Okay, great. Now, there's another thing. If it's a rabbinically prohibited thing, forget the risk to limb. If it's a rabbinically prohibited thing, then it would be also reasonable for a Jew to do things if it's rabbinically prohibited, and they're doing it with a shinui. They're doing it in an abnormal way. So I want to give a very classic example in the hospital. A person is on the hospital bed, they're recovering from a surgery, and they have, forgive me for not knowing the technical terms, but they have that button that you can press that increases the pain medication.
PCA.
Thank you very much. What?
Patient-controlled analgesia.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. So if they have that, so, you know, theoretically, if the nurse is right there, you could just ask them to increase the medication. But what if they're not right there? What if they need something for their general care and the nurse isn't around? They tell me that in hospitals, sometimes the nurse isn't always there. That's what they say. Sometimes. Sometimes. Not of their fault, but it's just the reality. So if it's something for the care of the patient, the call button, the pain control button, if you can push it with a shinui, because it's something electrically run, if you could push it with a shinui, that would be reasonable too. So you push it with your elbow, something like that, that would be okay. Another question that people ask me a lot, does it matter who's the one pushing with the shinui? Does it have to be the patient? It doesn't have to be the patient. Either one would be okay. One more thing, once we're talking about the hospital, just generally, kashrus in the hospital, it's Baruch Hashem, many of our local hospitals have kosher food plans. I do want to be clear, it's obviously very important when a person gets things to just look at what they've gotten. The turnover in these food departments in hospitals is tremendous, and many times very well-meaning people have no idea what you're talking about. So that's one thing. More specifically, milchigs, fleishigs is a big problem in kosher meals in hospitals. It's just very common that you have the basic meal, then they add a drink or something like that. It's extremely common to get a fleishigs meal and with a thing of milk that comes along with it. Again, the reality is there's a lot of turnover in these places. None of these places are under hashgacha. They just have kosher food and they're trying their best to serve you. So it is a very worthwhile thing as a patient in the hospital to put whatever is done possible to just be cognizant of such things.
So while we're talking about the hospitals, I think it's really important you can preempt some of this, to understand that you can preempt some of this. So what I mean by this, so if you speak to the nurse on Friday afternoon and say Shabbos is coming and those are the rules and regulations, that might be helpful, you think, for the beginning of Shabbos, but what about the rest of Shabbos? But the nurses are very good about passing on. They do something called report, and they meet at each change of shift and they tell every incoming nurse about each patient that they have. And they'll say these are the particulars about the patient, not just the heart and the lungs and the urine output, but they'll actually give details. And one example was a Chabad family at the NIH who had something that the Rebbe had given them, and it was very old and tattered, and the cleaning staff threw it away. And so they found it in the trash, they took it out and they recovered it. But the nurses were fantastic, because then every nurse after that knew about it. And so they made sure to come in and ask about it and talk about it, and gave the family an opportunity to talk about this thing that the Rebbe had given them. And it's illustrative of the fact that the nurses are very good about communicating. They're superb. They're master communicators. And whatever you tell them will get passed on. 99%, not 100%, 99% of the time. So you can explain, I can't switch on lights. You can say, I don't want to do this. You can say, please leave the bathroom light on. A classic example is the nurse coming in and switching off the bathroom light, or the cleaning staff switching off the bathroom light. Right? So you can explain all of that, and that will get passed on. And whatever else you need, if you want the heart plate left on, right? There are all these things that make a big difference on Shabbos. Don't hesitate to explain. You can say, I don't want to open the pill packet. And this will get passed on. And if you're there, I hope not. I hope no one's there for more than a week. But if you're there for the next Shabbos, it's amazing the nurses will usually know. So, communication and explain. Don't be scared.
This is not as relevant for the hospital, but maybe after the hospital or in other settings, there's a lot of confusion about the halachas of taking medication on Shabbos. There's a basic rabbinic prohibition of taking medicine on Shabbos, but there are many, many, many exceptions to that prohibition. So I just want to speak about it for a moment. That is, I want to speak about two general scenarios. One is if a person is taking medication that they regularly take. It could be a prescribed pill. It could be even vitamins. But something that they regularly take for medical reasons. So Moshe finds this very interesting tshuva where he basically explains that the prohibition of taking medicine on Shabbos does not apply to things that someone is taking proactively, not responding to how they're feeling in the moment. He holds that the problem of taking medicine, the prohibition of taking medicine on Shabbos is, oh, I'm not feeling well, let me take medicine. I don't want to get into more detail because of time, but if people want to ask, they can ask about it later. But so basically, anything you're taking regularly, there's no reason you shouldn't be taking it on Shabbos too. It's a very important thing to keep in mind. And the other thing is, let's say you are reacting to a circumstance. So we had defined a chola before. A chola is a person who is bedridden or in extreme pain. Those people, even if they are reacting to how they're feeling at the moment, it's perfectly fine for them to take medication also on Shabbos. That's a rabbinic prohibition, and the rabbis lifted that prohibition in this context. So, if a person has a migraine headache on Shabbos, it'll be very reasonable to take something. If a person has a headache that's bothering them, they really shouldn't. If a person has pulled their back and is in terrible pain on Shabbos, it'll be very reasonable to take that. And certainly if a person has some type of condition that when symptoms arise, they're instructed by the doctor to take certain medication because if not, their condition could worsen, they certainly should take medication on Shabbos. Okay.
So I feel like we're preaching here. But the medicine's very important to take, and it's very important to take consistently. And I've had people say to me, you know, I take my blood pressure medicine 6 days a week, and then I don't take it on Shabbos. Right? It's a very, yes, more than one person. And actually, despite my initial response wanting to shake them by the neck, counterproductive, I understand where they're coming from. I understand these are from people who are trying to do the right thing and just haven't been to sessions where they could hear Rabbi Rosenbaum explain. It's really important to take your medicines consistently. Let's just take blood pressure for a second. Blood pressure is very interesting because there are two common medicines we use for blood pressure that when you stop them, you can actually get a rebound. Right. So they're very good at controlling blood pressure. They're very safe. They have very few side effects, which is why we like to use them. But when you stop them and you get that rebound can be really dangerous.
Which medicine are they?
Well, I don't want people to stop taking their medicines. One is a class of medicines called beta blockers, and the other is a medicine called clonidine. But if you're taking either of those medicines, please don't stop. Please talk to your doctor. And if you're taking beta blockers, they're life-saving. There's no question. Dramatic differences in outcomes. So you put yourself at risk for a stroke by just not taking your medicine for that one day. A lot of these medicines are once a day. So you could even take it before Shabbos. But I mean, you should ask your rabbi, but I think it's really important to keep the timing between the medicines consistent. So if you take it every morning, you should stick to every morning. You really do put yourself at risk. The consistency of medicines is not something to be underestimated, to play with. Also, antibiotics. while we're talking about it, I think a lot of us are very nonchalant about antibiotics, and we say doctors prescribe a lot of antibiotics. May be true, may not be true. But if you're taking a course of antibiotics, you have to finish it. And you have to take the medicines as prescribed, and you can't miss doses. So consistency of medicine is really important.
Take questions at the end. Thank you for saying people should ask me. I would say ask your doctor. And if the doctor says the timing is important, I think the timing is important too. In all seriousness, even besides that, I think many times if people change up the patterns for medication, even if it's not so sensitive in terms of timing, they're much more likely to miss medications and things like that. And that, in my book, is enough of a cost to just take it on Shabbos regularly. I would like to speak about a few specific types of treatments that involve some real shilas of Shabbos and Yom Tov. My point here is not to avoid specific halachic discussion, specific circumstance. My point is just to draw people's attention to issues that they might assume are not even discussions. Numerous times over the years, unfortunately, people have asked me questions about schedules of cancer treatments that conflict with Yom Tovim. And I can't emphasize enough that it is absolutely reasonable to continue a cancer treatment over the course of a Yom Tov. In light of what we were talking about before, I'm very glad that people have asked me. In light of what we were talking about before, a person could arrange for a cab to come pick them up on Yom Tov. They could come in, they could do whatever they need to do, they could have the cab take them back home, and that should be absolutely fine. I would think in many of the circumstances the treatment itself could be classified as pikuach nefesh. I would think in many circumstances, and at the very least, they're a cholam. We already explained you could have non-Jews do malacha for you on Shabbos Yom Tov as a chola. So that's one thing, lo aleinu, but it's an important thing to keep in mind. Diabetes, for diabetics to measure their levels and things like that. There are numerous ways to measure levels. If people have specific issues, they can certainly discuss it with their rabbi, but as a general point, I would absolutely say it's extremely important for diabetics to measure themselves on Shabbos or Yom Tov, even if it would involve malacha. We could talk about ways that it's better to do it, and if at all possible, but people with diabetes should absolutely discuss with their rabbi ways that the ideal ways to measure, because they certainly should be measuring on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Numerous people in our community have nebulizer treatments that they use in the context of asthma. There are specific ways that it could be done. I don't want to belabor the point in this context, but please, if your doctor encourages you to have nebulizer treatments, please talk to your rabbi about how to do it. And I would say a similar thing about the CPAP machine. Sleep apnea is an increasingly pervasive issue within the medical community in general, but I just measure things by membership. There's a lot of people with CPAPs, Baruch Hashem. Depending on the level of sleep apnea, it really could be pikuach nefesh. And again, that's I don't want to go into all the details, but please, if a person shouldn't be, certainly if a person has serious sleep apnea, they shouldn't be using it 6 nights a week. They should be using it 7 nights a week, and we can talk about the ideal way to do it. Yeah, okay. The last thing, it's really a different topic, but once we're all here, I want to speak for a few minutes about medical needs on Yom Kippur, just to sensitize people to the issue. So I think we're very aware that if, heaven forbid, a person's life is at risk because of fasting on Yom Kippur or because of not taking certain medications on Yom Kippur, I think we're aware that a person needs to, as we started with, we'll talk about Shabbos, the other person needs to do whatever they can to keep themselves safe on Yom Kippur. The idea of shiurim, many of us do shiurim on Yom Kippur. It's a very real thing. If it's relevant for a person, they should discuss it with their rabbi. But I guess there's one point that I think sometimes slip between the cracks a little bit. I'm sorry to come back to medicine, but I think people don't have an appropriate appreciation for the allowance of taking medications on Yom Kippur. Okay, it's a very important thing. There's a basic concept in halacha that if a person is a chola, sorry to keep on coming back to this term of a chola, let's classify for these purposes a person who is in either extreme pain right now, is ill right now, or could become ill if they don't keep up their medication. And there are many medications out there. A person, thank God, is walking around fine. They're going to fast just fine on Yom Kippur. But heaven forbid, if they would skip that medication, they could end up in the hospital that day or days later or whatever it is, heaven forbid. The person should absolutely be taking the medication on Yom Kippur. Absolutely. Certainly, if it's a medication of a pill that's swallowed, that's what's called a chila shelo kederach. Now, we don't do it for no reason. I'll be very honest with you. I take some, thank God, I take some pills for relatively minor things. I normally skip that pill on Yom Kippur, but if it's something of a condition that is an important thing, a person absolutely should take an Yom Kippur, even if they need a little bit of water to get it down. At this point, you talk about a conversation with your rabbi, but please have the conversation with your rabbi. It's just a very, very important thing to keep in mind. I guess at this point, should we open it to questions? So how should we do the...
We can start asking questions.
Should we both stand up here?
Yeah, until 12 o'clock. So we can go
What's
back.
Your schedule? Do you have a diploma?
Actually, when we go here?
I'm just curious. Two things. One is when it comes to an injury that requires stitches, what the policy of Halacha is, and then also with regards to when you've gone to the hospital, can you return home with that?
Okay. Yeah. Good question. Okay, I would, I mean, maybe this is the dispart you could speak to better. I mean, I would guess there are certain circumstances that really are a very important medical need, and certain circumstances, at the very least, I mean, if heaven forbid, it looks like Pikuach Nefesh, we've discussed that already. I think your point is this a little bit of a lesser level. At the very least, I think it's extremely reasonable to have a non-Jew make the call and drive the person to the hospital. I don't know if you have any specific... I would say there's a general rule of thumb. I think that's extremely... Again, if you have any doubts about Pikuach Nefesh, you should do even more than that. But something that requires stitches, I think it's reasonable to say that it's okay to go to the hospital on Shabbos. I think so. Going back from the hospital on Shabbos is a great, great question. You're going to get different opinions about this. Okay, so... Oh, I was waiting for 25% of the room to cover their ears. So people can ask their own rabbis. Let me just first clarify. It is a very different question for the medical volunteer, Rav Moshe Feinstein's famous tshuva about someone from Hatzalah, versus the medical doctor versus the patient. Those are really three different questions. And you'll get different answers from different rabbis for these questions. But my guess is you're talking about the patient right now. That's my guess. So vis-a-vis the patient, let's think this through. Most people who are in the hospital on Shabbos are probably cholim, are probably sick. But it's most people are not dancing their way out of the hospital. The idea of them spending the rest of Shabbos just sitting in the waiting room doesn't seem to be medically a good idea. I normally advise people who are discharged from the hospital on Shabbos that they should, in most circumstances, that they should ask the hospital staff to call a cab for them. Again, it's you're asking Najib to do malacha for you, and then take the ride home. In terms of payment, it's a good thing to know the shul. He has a very nice arrangement with one of the local cab companies. There's information in our shul, directory. I'll be very honest. We've talked about turnover before with hospital staffs, with the food department. There's a lot of turnover at cab companies, evidently, because a lot of times you call them and they don't know what in the world you're talking about. Worst comes to worst, if you need to take some money along to give to them, that's a reasonable thing to do. If you know ahead of time that you're going to the hospital, you might be discharged on Shabbos, I normally advise people to take an envelope of, let's say, going to Ola Cross, $30. $30 should definitely cover it. An envelope of $30, stick it under your garbage can. You know, and then when the person drives you up, you tell them, you know, it's my Sabbath, I don't handle the money, but if you don't mind, you can just go into the garbage can and keep the change. And I wonder why I see people wandering up and down the streets picking up garbage cans on Shabbos. Did I answer your question? Oh, let me mention one more thing, if I may, which is many times a person being discharged from the hospital, he has someone with them. I think it's extremely reasonable. First of all, forgive me, if it's at night, even if the person is feeling well, I hope people aren't offended by this. If it's a woman at night driving down dark roads with a stranger of a cab driver, I get a little bit nervous sometimes, just inherently. But certainly, if the person needs help, kind of getting around and this and that, it's certainly reasonable to accompany them. We once had there was a Friday afternoon and one of my angelic children did something that required hospital attention. And by the way, it was classic. It was classic young parents. So we had two children at the time. So I can't do anything with blood. So my wife was definitely going to be the one. So we decided to go as a family so I could sit in the waiting room with the other child. But not sure how smart that was, but that's what we did. So the bottom line was, when Baruch Hashem, everything was okay, my wife went in the cab with the children. It wasn't feasible for the children to walk home Friday night. The need was great, but I walked home. But that was, my wife didn't have the medical need. Do you know what I mean? But I would say that for adults also, an adult, a healthy person accompanying the patient is a reasonable thing.
Were you safe?
What?
Were you safe?
I think, yeah.
So there's also coming when people come back from the hospital and right. their prescriptions. And they go to the pharmacy.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And please. So we have an arrangement with the pharmacy.
Yeah, we have a very nice, the shul has a very nice arrangement with the pharmacy, the CVS right over here. If you get there and they don't know what you're talking about, ask to speak to the manager. And the arrangement is as follows. If you come in and you tell them that you're staffed observant and you're not carrying money, they give you a partial prescription that covers you through the holiday or Shabbos or whatever it is, and that you come back after Shabbos or Yom Tov, you get the rest of the prescription, and then you pay for the entire prescription. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you talked partially the previous question. If someone needs to go to the hospital or a hospital for cancer treatment, you detailed the paragon of how to do that. Can an accompany person go with them on Shabbos, even if it is not a life, and can they come back?
That's a good question. I think it would depend on the circumstances. I think sometimes, heaven forbid, people are kind of weak and this and that. Yeah. Sometimes people are really feeling very well, or maybe you're concerned they'll be weak on their way back from the treatment or something like that. I don't know. I think if the feeling is that they're weak and then it would be helpful to have someone go along with them, I think that's very reasonable. If they're feeling fine and there's no reason they shouldn't be feeling fine coming back to the treatment, I don't know how likely that is, then theoretically they should go alone. But it probably makes sense in most cases to have someone go along with them.
They could feel fine medically, perhaps, but a lot of them may have a lot of anxiety. Is that it?
Maybe a case-by-case basis, but that would be a valid factor.
I just wanted to mention with emergency situations on Shabbos, Ecopolum has Shabbos emergency bags with several area hospitals with kosher packaged food, grape juice, matzah, so you can make kiddush if you're stuck in the hospital and you don't have to use the vending machine, because a lot of hospitals don't understand that you don't have money. They'll say, well, there's chocolate bars or whatever in the vending machine. So at Holy Cross, because that's the hospital that serves most of us, it is by the information desk in the main lobby. They all know. You just ask for the kosher bag, and they will give it to you, and you can take it back to the emergency room with you or wherever you are, and then you can return it afterwards. And it's restocked every week, so it's always full of provision.
Okay, I have two questions. It was a situation that we dealt with some years ago. My father was transferring someone from the hospital to a rehab center on Shabbos or Yom Tov.
Great.
I have another question.
Right, so that in light of what we spoke about, it fits with a lot of the other stuff we spoke about. Very reasonable to ask, certainly reasonable to ask the non-Jewish staff to make those calls. It's a very common thing, you're right, to transfer from the hospital to the rehab center. It should be fine. Now, it could very well be that the adult child in that circumstance needs to come along to make sure that the patient is either taken care of or satisfied with what's going on, and if that's the case, then I think it's very reasonable for the adult child to come along. Thank you.
Also, totally different. You were talking about a Jewish nurse versus a non-Jewish nurse. The Jewish nurse is there to care for the patient, even if it's on Shabbos. I mean, I know there's issues, but if the nurse has, if it's that's his or her time, like, you know, they have the shifts, they're there for that purpose. So how do you say, even if, like, if your nurse is on duty, if your nurse is a Jewish nurse, you can't say no, you can't, I mean, like, how do you work around that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a valid point. I could give you kind of a detailed response back. It's funny, I've had calls from doctors. It's not as complicated, because the things the doctors are doing are, I've had calls from nurses from our community about what they should do if they, and it's a valid discussion. I can't give you a brief appropriate answer. Maybe we'll
I realize that it depends on, like, if it's an ICU versus
Right. I mean, listen, the bottom line is, if what we're talking about is basic medical needs for the person, whatever, you know, if we're talking about more comfort type of things, and it's appropriate for the Jew to be doing with the Shinui, and this Jew isn't going to do with the Shinui, it's a hard thing. It would have to be on a case-by-case basis. But if it's, I need more medication, I'm with you. You know, they just need to do what they need to do, you know. And more specific than that, maybe case-by-case basis.
I just want to change gears. We're talking about where you are with the person who needs the help. But what if you are the primary caregiver for an older, and this is an elderly woman, she's in her 90s, but I'm sure I'm not alone with this, and she is, thank God, right at the moment living by herself. But I get a call or I get a notice, and they say, we are taking your mother to the hospital. She wants you there. What do you do? How do you work it? I discussed it with somebody else, and I don't know how to, you know?
Yeah.
And to her, you're right. Technically, it's not life or death.
Right.
But to her, I'm her only surviving child.
Right.
It would be.
It's a very hard one. I think there could definitely be cases where it's reasonable to ask a non-Jewish neighbor to call a cab for a person. I think there definitely could be cases like that. Would I say that across the board? I'm not sure. I think it would depend on the personalities and the facts on the ground and the level of need. But it's definitely valid. I think it would have to be assessed case by case, but it's a valid discussion. And I think there could be circumstances where it's appropriate. I think so.
We had a case 27 years ago. What happens when you go to a you have a situation, you go to a doctor or to the hospital, and they say you have to go home. They did tests. They don't have the results. And the doctor says, I know you're Shomer Shabbos, but I'm going to call you, and you have to pick up the phone, and I may have to get a prescription because this is very serious. Not Jewish doctor, or maybe not a religious doctor. I mean, what is the...
If it's very serious and time is important and this and that, I'd pick up the phone. I would do that.
Okay, so you depend upon the physician's...
If he tells you that we need to take a test and if it comes out positive, then you're going to need to start medication within the next 24 hours, and it's 3 o'clock Shabbos afternoon, so, you know what I mean?
No,
so, but if he tells you that there's something, and if this is positive, we need you right back here at the hospital or something like that, I would pick up the phone.
Okay.
I would absolutely pick up the phone.
Okay, so, imagine the case of somebody who breaks a bone, and you could have a non-Jew call like the ambulance.
Right.
So would it be appropriate in that case also to have somebody go with them? Even though
I think as a general rule of thumb, especially when a person is being admitted to the hospital, it's very important to have someone with them. I think that's true. I think that's a very fair rule of thumb.
Okay. Just a comment on the fractures. I mean, even if they're not sticking out, a lot of them could still be within the classification of Pikuach Nefesh,
okay.
Because you don't know how much bleeding is going on,
right.
Other
right.
complications that could occur
right.
that affect the whole
I have to. I'm so glad you're making the comment. I have to apologize, but we were speaking, I left out a piece. Very fair. I actually was sort of alluding to that, but I shouldn't have just alluded when I said, you know, if there's a doctor there that says definitely not Pikuach Nefesh, but very fair. It could very well be that with broken bones in general, there's at least a suffix Pikuach Nefesh, and it makes sense to do whatever you need to do to get to the hospital. Thank you. I'm very glad you made that comment. Thank you very much. Excuse me. It was my fault.
Okay. I have four things. One is with...
One question time because our people still have...
I know. It's just four things all combined. One, with regard to stroke, one other thing that you didn't mention is if the person looks good, ask them to stick out their tongue, and if they can move it.
I don't want to teach people to be... The question is if a person has a stroke and can't move their tongue or can move their tongue. My intention was not to be exhaustive and go through the whole textbook. There are lots of symptoms we didn't discuss. The same with bones. When we were talking... Rosenbaum, we listed a whole lot of things and decided it would be easier to keep it conceptual than go through every possible scenario. Yes, if you can't move your tongue, but there are lots of things that can cause you not to move your tongue that are not just one.
Okay.
So it's not, right.
Okay.
But yes.
The next thing is heart, with regard to women.
Yes.
Women can get back pain or shoulder pain.
Again, I didn't want to be exhausted.
Okay.
Yes, and stomach pain.
That's
men
right.
and women can have pain in their stomachs, which could be a heart attack.
Right. Antibiotics in the hospital. Would you suggest that they give acidophilus or probiotics with them?
This is not to do with Shabbos.
Oh, okay,
fine. This is the medical
fine.
Opinion. Yes. In general, most hospitals, for example, at the NIH and at Suburban, with the two hospitals I work at, when you prescribe an antibiotic, that you have to But the default is that they'll get a probiotic with it. Okay. And as a physician, you have to specify that you do not want the patient to get that.
Okay.
So I think standard of care and good practice is to give that, but that's not relevant to the topic at hand.
Okay, and dialysis on Shabbos or Yom Tov.
If it's part of an essential...
And if you needed assistance to go with you or to come back, you could have that. Okay. Got it.
You mentioned before about being able to do things for a non-Jew. So can you basically do anything for a non-Jew that you would do for a Jew on Shabbos? To save their life or to help them?
To save their life, that's the bottom line. To save their life, that's the bottom line. If you find yourself in a setting where there's a non-Jew and it looks like they might have had a stroke or a heart attack or whatever it is, whatever you'd be doing for the bottom line is you're doing the same as an object.
What if the person, going back to the question about 90-year-old person, what if it's not a matter of the person being taken to the hospital, but the person's dying and they want you with them?
It's a hard question. I know it's a hard question. Maybe we'll leave that to case by case. We'll leave that to case. Sorry.
So if you're in that situation, if you're the child of this lovely person, is it sensible to shut the phones off on Shabbos?
Let's leave that to case by case. I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
I just want to go back to acidophilus. The acidophilus can be life-saving, the probiotic.
That's correct.
Yes. So I don't mean to... I'm not blowing off the question.
I know.
I'm just saying that that's a question. That's something you get every day, and it would fall in the category of getting medicine.
Many people don't know about it.
I have a question for Dr. Heller. Is there an age at which any illness is life-threatening? I mean, if you're talking about somebody who's 90 or, 85 or is there an age at which anything that happens is life-threatening?
Anything that happens.
Oh, you're going to get trouble.
Anything that happens. So, we had a neighbor whose mother was, Leonora, 102. Mm-hmm. And I went to, and they were very concerned about her, and I went to see her, and she was fine, and we didn't call 911. So, I don't think everything is life threatening. I think we have to be, yes, when you're in a small child, pregnant woman, someone who has cancer, some pre-existing condition, being very elderly, these do predispose you and make you more vulnerable. So I'd have a lower threshold to call and I'd be more anxious about in those settings. But anything, everything, I would just say everything. Yes. But yes, again, in doubt, call.
I just wanted to make one point. Rabbi Rosenbaum made the statement that you should think about health and life insurance. Same thing for long-term disability if you're supporting your family. It's really great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do I understand correctly that for someone who's just sick and in danger of losing a limb, that person can do anything that's Mr. Durabanan without a shinoi? But if they're just sick and they're not in danger of losing a limb, then for an Issa Durabanan, they could do it with a shinoi.
As long as it's not the Kohavish, right? Right, yeah.
Question? What about an unstandable pressure ulcer or burn where you're not sure how bad it is?
Well, the pressure ulcer didn't just happen.
Can you repeat the question, please?
The question is, what about about a pressure ulcer, unstageable pressure ulcer? And by staging, I assume you mean the depth, stage 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
Right? So there's a classification for pressure ulcers as to their significance, and you're asking about a burn. So pressure ulcers don't happen suddenly. I'm not sure what you... So you noticed it for the first time on Shabbos, or you...
Yeah, and it was unstageable.
Or the burn occurred on Shabbos?
Yes.
A burn occurring on Shabbos is significant, right?
But someone you're not sure if it's a first, second, or third degree burn, like a water burn or something like that.
I think if there's a question,
you should
go
to the hospital.
Okay.
Yeah, and pressure ulcers are a little bit more difficult because it's not clear that that's immediately put koach nefesh. Usually pressure ulcers don't happen overnight. A stage 4 pressure ulcer doesn't happen overnight.
Usually.
It should not.
Usually.
Yes. That person needs to be on, they need to be debilitated, they need to be in that one position for hours at least. Mm-hmm. Right? And usually it's an instance of not having checked those areas carefully. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the specifics of the individual case. But if you find someone with a pressure ulcer who's otherwise stable, who's not febrile, whose blood pressure is okay, whose heart rate's okay, let's not immediately put cross fish, I don't think. If I can go out on a limb.
If you have a person who has psoriasis and he has varices, how can you tell when they need to go to the hospital, say if those varices should burst or fill with blood, or then they need to be tied off? And also, it's a question, even if someone is sick and they call you on Shabbos and you know who that person is, do you pick up the phone because you know they're in a condition that they may need your help, may need to get to the hospital? How do you know?
So I would say to
why don't you take it first, then I'll take the second. Unless you want to do it the other way around.
I mean, two comments on it. So two things. First of all, I think if the person knows that they have varices and knows that they have psoriasis, they should be calling 911. With all respect to you.
Yeah, right.
With all due respect to you, they should be calling 911. If they're calling you because they're not sure, varices are not subtle. Variceal bleeding is dramatic.
Okay.
It can be subtle, but most, like the pressure ulcer, there are always exceptions, but in most cases, variceal bleeding is pretty dramatic. They vomit large amounts of blood, they stool large amounts of blood, and it may not be red blood, maybe maroon, but that's something that you would have difficulty missing. And they very quickly begin to feel unwell. So if I don't think that's something that most people would miss.
I think in terms of calls on Shabbos, I keep on saying this now, I think it depends a lot on the situation in general. In other words, when they call, there are people in the shul who have told me that when they have a loved one who calls, when they understand Shabbos, they understand, when they call, it's because it's really, then that's one thing. If it's someone who doesn't even, who's not even, sometimes, especially if it's an older person, they don't even remember which day is which. And if you have no specific reason to believe that they have a problem,
right. They
might just be calling to say, hi, good morning. And that happens too. Now, if it could be either one, that's a subject. That's what I mean. I think it depends a lot on the specific. I don't mean that morning it depends. I mean in terms of a general approach, I think it depends a lot on who we're talking about and what the dynamics are and what the potential risks in their situation are. So I don't mean to be evasive. I just think it's hard to give a one-size-fits-all answer. Yeah.
I think we've covered a lot of ground here, but as usual, you have to consult your local rabbi and doctor, if possible, before the situation arises. Thank you very much for coming out.
Thank you.
We welcome you.